Hello.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Vitter Radio. Vitter Radio is an online radio show and podcast that focuses on fan vids and the vidding community. A vid is loosely described as editing of clips from a TV show and or movie set to a song in a transformative way. The terms remix and mashup are more popular terms for what I would say is called vidding, but for me don't capture the kind of commentary and exploration that these videos provide. So I'm going to start the show with a little bit of beginning audio, and we will be talking with our guest Serena, who's an editor who did a film noir tribute that got a lot of attention, and we're going to talk to her about that video and other things as well. Welcome to Vitter Radio. Serena is a 24-year-old California-based self-taught video editor who came to prominence in 2009 when her video tribute to film noir titled The Endless Night, A Valentine to Film Noir, created when she was only 19, caught the attention of Eddie Muller, film noir aficionado and host of the Film Noir Festival. He has referred to it, the work that she did in this video, as the best distillation of film noir I've ever seen. Her video was shown on the big screen at the Castro Theater to approximately 1,400 members of the festival. Her work inspired the board of directors of the Film Noir Foundation to create an Endless Night Award to be awarded to young artists who created work in any medium that, quote, extends the ethos and allure of classic film noir into a new generation. She was additionally awarded the prize of editing software called Final Cut Studio, and she switched her major from psychology and majored in film as a result of this encouragement from the festival members. Serena is a graduate of the Teledramatic Arts and Technology Department at Cal State Monterey Bay. In addition to editing, she also writes her blog, Brief Encounters of the Cinematic Kind. It's a pleasure to have Serena as our guest today on the show. Welcome, Serena.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, and I also want to let our listeners know that the link to her blog is on our show page, as well as the link to her video, so you could check it out yourself. So the first thing I'd like to start off with is just asking you how you came to be interested in film and film noir specifically.
Well, with film, when I was a kid, I was kind of like a very weird and very shy kid, and I think I just watched a lot of movies just as a way to both just as, you know, a boredom buster, but also just to try and understand people in general, because I felt like that was a great, you know, window into the world. At least if movies are done right, they can be an expression of our humanity. And so I was interested in film at a really young age, but I think the thing that really did it for me was when I was 17, I watched Bringing a Baby and His Girl Friday. And after that, I fell completely in love with, like, classic black and white movies. And I wanted to see everything that Cary Grant ever made and everything Howard Hawks ever made. And from there, I wanted to see everything Alfred Hitchcock ever made and Ingrid Bergman and Jimmy Stewart and Katharine Hepburn and different directors and actors. And obviously film noir is like a detour that is inevitable when you get into classic movies. And what I really liked about film noir is, I guess, well, for one thing, I did just say that, you know, movies can be a great expression of humanity, and film noir is just, it's just the most existential morality tales of any film genre. And When I was 17 and I was about to graduate high school, I really wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do with my life. I felt like film noir was actually really comforting because then I could look at film noirs and think, well, I don't really know what I want to do with my life, but at least I'm not murdering people and embezzling money and getting into really bad trouble.
Right. Did you find any kind of community among peers at that time who were also interested, or was this more like an individual interest of yours?
It was more of an individual interest, even in most film classes. It's still kind of hard to find people that are into, like old classic movies or European art house movies. I think even in college, among my majors, I was like one of the only people who actually watched Ingmar Bergman movies for fun. But yeah, I mean, there were like a couple of people who, I was able to bond with and who shared that interest. But it is a very niche genre.
Can you explain the process behind your creating the video, The Endless Night? Like, how did your interest move from watching movies to actually creating something like that?
Usually, when I do a video, it usually all starts with music. And I remember, I think it was around the summer of 2008. I was my mom was delivering newspapers at the time, and so every once in a while, I would like ride around with her. And this is like between the hours of like 2 and 5 in the morning or something like that. And we would just be like listening to things that she had in her tape deck. And she had a Massive Attack tape called Mezzanine, and the first song is Angel, and it's I don't know if anyone out there knows the song. It's been used a lot in movies, and it's fairly known. But it just has like this beautiful way of building up, and there's like a very dark and sinister feel to it, and then it just keeps building up to this amazing climax, and then it has this drop off, and in a way it almost mimics the narrative in a way. There's a setup, and then there's a build up, and then there's a climax, and there's a resolution to that song, which I thought was really amazing. And so I was listening to this song like in like the dead middle of the night when most people are, either asleep or they're off committing crimes, basically. And so I was listening to this song, and then I was just like getting the images of film noir in my head, and there are like these certain beats that I thought can make really good cuts. And so I basically worked like a little bit over a few months. I would just, get DVDs from the library, and I'd rip them. I'd watch them first, and then I'd rip them. And obviously, my workload is much more differently now that I'm a little bit more professional. But I just worked like a little bit over a few months, and then after 6 months, it was all done, and I felt like at that time, I had done everything that I could on it, and so I posted it up on YouTube.
Wow, so you really spent a lot of time with it and reviewing it, and I guess you got to a point where you felt like, okay, I did as much as I could do with this.
Yeah, and now, 6 years later, I look back and I look at all the things I could have changed, and there's actually a possibility that I may be actually revisiting it and at least giving it a higher resolution upgrade, but I might go back and change like a couple of shots or something.
Okay, that sounds exciting. Be looking forward.
Yeah. And like I said, I was working like a little bit at a time, I didn't even work like from start to finish. There was, like sometimes there would be like a part like 2 minutes into the song that I would just like want to work on that one little part. I wasn't even working like very linearly.
Right, I understand. So before your video got, quote, discovered, what was the initial response when you first posted the video? Was there a time before you got contacted about it, or was there like immediate response to what you'd created?
No, it was really just like another thing that I had put up on YouTube. I mean, the comments were enthusiastic, but Eddie first contacted me in October. I posted the video up, I think it was like December 28th, 2008. And I remember because it was Anne Savage's birthday. No, it was the day that Anne Savage died, and it was my friend Cecilia's birthday. I have a weird
Oh.
memory for these things, but Yeah, so it was basically up like very late in 2008, and then Eddie contacted me in October of 2009. So that's about 9 months, 9 or 10 months.
Wow.
And yeah, there were positive comments, but nothing at all like, getting contacted by Eddie Mueller saying, "I want to show your thing at the Castro Theater." And then after that, when we were in contact about, like replacing a couple of clips where the quality wasn't so great, and then like seeing the build up to the showing at the Castro, like that was really the game changer in a lot of ways.
Yes. So tell me, what was the experience like? How did you, I guess you initially got, from what I've read, you got contacted by him, and what was the pro, like what happened after that that led you actually attending the event and actually seeing it? What was that whole process like?
It was really strange and really beautiful. Like, it didn't even really hit me until it actually happened. Like, I would tell people, "Yeah, there's this thing that I made that's going to be shown at the Castro Theater." And I'd been to the Castro Theater. If you guys haven't been to the Castro Theater in San Francisco, you're missing like the best movie going experience of your life. Even if you've seen Adam Sandler movie there, it's still an amazing experience. It's a movie palace that was built in 1922, and it seats 1,400 people. And the architecture is just—it's absolutely amazing. And the Film Noir Festival hosts their event there every year, and every year it sells out. And there are people coming from all over the world. So I did know that it was pretty amazing. But even then, it didn't really hit me until like it actually happened. And it was shown, and then Eddie, got up on stage, and he said that it was the best distillation of film noir that he had ever seen. And then I was able to like get up and take a bow, and it's strange because as a film editor, you spend a lot of time like alone in the dark in your computer. So it was pretty overwhelming to suddenly be like in the spotlight and to have people come up to me and get that actual response from actual people instead of just YouTube comments. It was really overwhelming in a good way.
Yeah, in the research leading up to this interview with you, just to get a sense of the work that you did, I saw there were a lot of blogs that picked up on the video, and there were a lot of positive comments, and it really had an impact and struck a chord within the community. So I can imagine, like, for that period of time, you were just getting lots of praise and comments and everything else. So
Yeah, and it is kind of interesting, just to live in the world that we live in right now, where, if something gets picked up on, the right person on Twitter, it just spreads like wildfire. And it's funny because my video, it actually hasn't gotten like that many hits. Like, despite the attention, I think it's only had like less than 200,000 views, but still, like, I really appreciate that it has the legs that it's had, 6 years later, and still talking about it. I feel like people are still going out there and discovering it. And yeah, like a couple of prominent people did, post it on their Twitter page or whatever. But I do really appreciate the legs that it's had. And usually you don't see that a lot in, this viral world that we're living in right now.
Yes. I just want to let our listeners know that we will be taking calls. If you want to call in and ask Serena a question, the number to call in is 347-633-9249. Again, that's 347-633-9249. So now I can imagine that you're a regular at the festival, and I believe they've practically adopted you now. Can you tell us a little bit about the Film Noir Foundation and what it does?
The Film Noir Foundation, it was set up by Eddie Mueller. I think it was 10 years ago. Their festival has been going on for, I think, 13 years, and the mission of the Film Noir Foundation is to restore and to exhibit basically like forgotten film noirs. They did an amazing restoration recently of Woman on the Run. Have you seen Woman on the Run or heard of it?
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
It's just I it's a really, really great movie with Anne Sheridan, and it was shot in San Francisco, so you can imagine it was, the baby of a film of a foundation that's based in San Francisco. And so that is their goal, and they and their film noir festival, it's not just in San Francisco. They actually go all over the US. They go to Chicago and they go to Portland and LA, and I think there may even be a French leg of it. So they're really spreading and they're just getting bigger and bigger every year, and it's going to be really amazing to see how they grow and hopefully to become a part of it, even if it is just as, an adopted family member.
Yeah, I can sense that when you started this, like you said, initially you were an individual really interested in this, but through your work and your sharing of it on YouTube, you sort of like have found the community that you didn't have when you started. And that's really comforting to think that like you can actually have your community find you by doing what you love.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do sometimes, I'm sure that so far you've gotten a sense of this, sort of bewilderment, like the world that we're living in now, and how only, 10 years ago we didn't have Facebook, we didn't have YouTube, and how that world has changed. And I think it's mostly been a positive experience. I have actually met like good friends through like the IMDb message boards originally, and then we would meet in person, and now I actually have pretty solid friendships because of that. And I think it's a great way for film buffs or film editors to really see who's out there, because like I said, it is a lot of just being at your computer alone. Even watching movies is kind of like a solitary experience. Everyone looking in one direction, no one can talk to each other, but then there is this community, whether it's like the IMDb message boards or Facebook or something. But I have actually been fortunate to meet and network with some really great people.
Cool. So, how has your editing process evolved after your initial success? Was it kind of daunting? Like, did you have that now, this expectation everyone is expecting that what you were going to do was going to top your, initial video?
And it is sort of frustrating that, in a way, it is frustrating that I keep getting attention for this one video that I posted like 6 years ago, and the fact that I have become a better film editor since then. I was editing on like iMovie HD, which is the free program on Macs, and now I have Final Cut Pro, and I have better tools. I feel like I have become a better editor, and yet. And yeah, people are still fixing on this one thing that I did so long ago. But in terms of how I don't really think that much about trying to, top myself, because I feel like personally I have become a better film editor since then, even if other people don't quite see that. I know that I have. And my workflow has also really changed since then. I mentioned that I worked like a little bit over a period of about 6 months, and obviously if I'm professional, if I'm on a deadline, I can't do that anymore. So my output has obviously changed, and it's funny because pretty much every year now I do a tribute for the Film Noir Festival, and I was actually really worried this year that I was just going to be spinning my wheels, and I almost said no to Eddie, which I is really hard for me to do because I adore him and I owe so much to him. But I was really worried that I was going to just do like another like 5 minute like dirge song, another like somewhat tech. I was going to use the same music and it was going to be the same beats that I've already done. So what I did to spice that up is that I used completely different music. I wanted to have a sense of humor this time because I feel like my sense of humor doesn't always come out in my videos. And so the theme this year for the Film Noir Festival was marriage. And obviously, if you watch film noir or if you just watch movies from the 1940s, you know that there's a very biting sense of humor and there's just great dialogue in those movies. So the music that I used was I used Love and Marriage by Frank Sinatra in a sort of ironic sense. And then I use an Al Green song. I use Love and Happiness, which was actually Eddie Mueller's suggestion. He was worried that the Frank Sinatra song would just be like way too on the nose, so we decided to shake it up a little bit. And it actually turned out to be really successful. People really liked it, and I felt happy that I was doing something different, something that would actually generate laughs instead of just terror.
Yeah, I saw the video, and I really saw the evolution of you using multiple songs and using dialogue, and it sort of makes the journey a little in more, like you said, interesting in that you're showing comedic aspects as well as serious aspects of what you're trying to convey.
And part of that's just the fact that I had better software. When I was on iMovie HD, all the film editors will know who I'm talking about, and some other might not, but in iMovie, you can't really use audio crossfades, so it's very hard to use like different songs or to even like lower the levels of one thing very gracefully. And so I wasn't really able to play around a lot with multiple songs, but just by virtue of the technology, I can do that now, and I think it's actually made my editing stronger.
Yes. Now, you also write a blog and you focus on film. And so that provides another outlet for you to express your thoughts on film.
Oh yeah. And when I was younger, I actually really wanted to be like the next Roger Ebert. I was just a very painted child, and obviously no one's going to top Roger Ebert, so I'm not even going to try. But I have wanted to be a writer actually for as long as I can remember. When I was a kid, that was just like my main outlet. And I still think it's a really good outlet for me and for so many other people. So I do have a blog. I don't write on it very often because my computer situation is just a little bit precarious, especially right now because I'm in the middle of a move. But I would like to write more on it, and I think that just understand because media has such a powerful influence over everyone, whether it's the news that we watch or just the movies that we watch. It does have a huge amount of influence over us and over the way that we live. And so I think that just to understand really critically what you're being exposed to is a really, really powerful tool that you can have. And so I think that, the writers out there who analyze movies or analyze how we react to news, it might seem trivial in the big scheme of things, but considering the world we live in, I think it's actually very important work, and I really like to be a part of that.
Yeah. Did you watch the Oscars this year?
I didn't. No, I don't have TV. I think I was like updating IMDb to see who the winners were, but I didn't watch the actual show.
Did you have any strong opinions about who was nominated and who won?
Not really. I try not to put too much stock into Oscars just because, for one thing, I feel like the Oscars are like the presidential elections. The winners always go to whoever had the most money behind the campaign, and I think that's really ridiculous. I don't think it's a good way to celebrate art. And for another thing, it's really rare that your own personal opinions really match up with who actually wins. And if you look throughout
Yeah.
history, like we remember like Cary Grant, who never won a competitive Oscar. And he was nominated for two like pretty minor movies in his filmography. And we don't really know. I mean, there are so many winners that don't really stand the test of time in history, and there are so many, nominees or quote unquote losers who actually do. So I think the longevity is so much more rewarding than the actual Oscar. And and it just they always go to a certain type of movie. Like I loved Under the Skin. Under the Skin was my favorite movie of last year probably. And but it just doesn't fit into that category that the Oscars set up. It's not The Imitation Game, which was just really lackluster in so many ways, but it's about a great mad scientist, and it's about overcoming obstacles or disability in some ways. And that's, even though it was a really unremarkable movie, it fit that category and that mold that the Oscars have set up.
All
And it's
right.
funny that, yeah. I was happy to see Birdman win. I thought it was a really good movie. And I wanted Michael Keaton to win as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's the blog is an outlet for you to maybe give more attention to things that might not get as much attention and express your thoughts about stuff that's not necessarily traditional Hollywood fare and like celebrating patting each other on the back on the popular stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, I really hope so. And like I said, I really wish that I could write on it more often, but for whatever reason, I don't. And I actually think I'm a much better writer than I am a speaker. So I hope people will realize that through my writing and not just this interview.
Okay. And I just want to remind our listeners that the link to your blog is on the show page, and that if you want to call in and you have any questions for Serena, questions that you feel like she should be asked, or you're really interested to find out her point of view on editing or film or any of the things that we've talked about so far or haven't talked about, please call us at 347-633 9249. I also want to remind our listeners that this Vitter radio show is currently running as a trial and will depend on your listener support. And so we're looking to basically crowdfund and raise funds to keep the premium version of this radio show on. And our operating costs are about $40 a month or $400 a year. So you can help us keep the show going past our 1 month trial by contributing to our GoFundMe page, and you can go to gofundme.com/vradio. And so vetting is a labor of love, and we feel it's important to have a space where vetters and editors can express their unique voice, and we feel that they have something to say about the creative process that can possibly educate not only people who watch videos, but also fellow peers within the editing community. And that brings me to a question. Are there editors, or like when you're looking at a movie, do you now look at movies from the perspective of editing and keep track not only of maybe the popular categories of actors, director, and producers, but also editors?
Yeah, I'm definitely a lot more aware of editing right now, and something that, and especially going to film school and realizing, like, looking at a movie in its entirety, like, I think like what Vitters do, it's obviously like very it's very short, and it's really more about like individual cuts, and so you don't often think about like an hour and a half long movie and thinking about, okay, what's the pacing of it going to be? What's like, are is there too much fat in it or what? And I do think that I am a lot more aware of film editing, but I do try and think of it more in terms of the broader scope of things instead of just individual cuts, which is usually where the glory is. I mean, everyone remembers the cut from Lawrence of Arabia where he's blowing out a match, and then it's the match cut to the sun rising. But then you don't really think about like the larger 4 hour movie, this monster of a 4 hour movie, and the whole process that Andy Coates had to go through with that whole thing. And that's something that I would really like to be more aware of.
And I think it's a great place to start on the small form, and like I think there are things that are unique to what you're able to do in your videos, not just with Endless Night. I've watched some of your other videos, but I was reading a blog article about Endless Night, and they talked about like watching the video that they noted how the opening lyric, "You Are My Angel," arrives in sync with a shot of Gene Simmons from Angel Face. And that is something that I think, may not be done that much in movies, of combining lyrics from a song and bringing new meaning, like songs that never probably existed during the time the movies were made now bring new meaning to an edit like you did with Endless Night.
Yeah, and I think one worry that people might have about that is it being too on the nose. And when something is too on the nose, it can feel like they're trying to, be like, "Look at me, look at how smart that I am." And hopefully it doesn't come off, like that in my videos. But like I said, it usually like all starts in music, and I really fell in love with the tone of that song that I chose for Endless Night. But then, yeah, I was seeing the lyrics and seeing how, like, with the lyric, her eyes, she's on the dark side, and with the beats, that what if I could do something really cool with eyes and make a little montage of that. And so it all starts with the song, basically.
Yeah. And I love the whole aspect. Sometimes when I see videos online that mix clips from multiple movies and TV shows, there will be people who rediscover movies or want to find out about the movies in those videos and ask, okay, at 1 minute and 30 seconds, where was this clip from? And really like then getting like interest in those individual movies. And so I think it's a great way of basically showcasing and promoting films that people, want to find out more about or didn't know that they wanted to find out more about.
Yeah, and that was I feel like that was one great positive thing about my videos, that I got so many questions about, like, okay, there's this one clip with gas masks. What's that from? And that was like the most requested one, is from Crisscross. There's a heist sequence and everyone's using gas masks, and it looks very modern. It's like very apocalyptic, at least as we know it, in the 21st century. And I got so many requests about that, and I think that is why it was so renowned, because it was bringing a very old genre that a lot of people around my age just don't really care about, and bringing it into modern times with the music. And I think it's great, for other people to do that and to bring popularity again to movies that might otherwise be obscure or forgotten by a modern generation.
Yes. And speaking of like the online world out there, are there other editors that you've looked at that you admire or see something that, has you be interested in their work?
It's funny. I actually don't watch a lot of those anymore, at least not from like one specific person. One film editor that I've always really admired is her YouTube username is Clara Darko, and you may have actually reached out to her, as you
Yeah.
mentioned. But she's this amazing film editor. I think she's living in Spain, but she makes these really beautiful mashups and supercuts. And she was actually a huge inspiration to me, just when I was starting off and doing my own vidding and my own film editing. And I've even sent her a couple of emails just saying how much that I've really admired her work. And if you liked LA Confidential, you might like In a Lonely Place, and just emails like that. And I would highly recommend her if you guys don't know who she is, because she's an amazing film editor.
Yes, I've seen her work and I completely agree. And she has quite a volume of videos and quite a library to make those videos, because there's so many compilations from, and her work as well has been mentioned on several blogs as well. And
Rightfully so.
that's great to hear that like she helped also inspire you. So how is it now in terms of like I know that you write a blog and you also edit something of the two or of something else. Is there something that's having a stronger pull for you?
Professionally, I think I would be a little bit lost if I didn't have like an artistic outlet. And obviously I've gravitated towards film because I just love storytelling and I love narrative. I love visual arts and I just love anything that can help us to prove our humanity. The great thing about the film school that I went to is that they kind of like you just dabble a little bit in everything. And whereas a lot of other film schools might say, okay, if you want to be a screenwriter, you're going to take nothing but screenwriting classes. And at my film school, you tried everything and see what you liked. And that's really what I'm trying to explore right now that I'm out of college and my life is a Lena Dunham movie. But I just want to try everything and see what fits. And something that I would actually really like to pursue is actually like working in the film distribution and exhibition level. I did an internship a few years ago with a film festival, and I really loved the work I was doing. It was a lot of just watching movies and seeing what was good, what was bad, and it was data entry and inviting filmmakers and just making sure that the festival went smoothly, and it mostly did. So that's definitely something that I would really love to be involved in. I feel like that's where I do have very much a pull. So I'm looking into that, and editing is going to be a part of my life for a very long time. It's obviously where I have an audience and it's where I do feel comfortable, but even though I do think I'm very much an introvert, and even though I am a person who can spend, hours on my computer, it is, after a while, you do feel the weight of that, whether it's just physically or emotionally, not really being able to, get out and to talk to people. I am feeling like I need to sort of recalibrate that. And it might just be that I need to go out and get a social life and go, do dance classes every Friday night or something. But it is something to really consider, just the fact that you do spend so much time alone at your computer and realizing the balance that you need in terms of work and a social life.
Yeah, and I've seen through certain editors on YouTube that they have spurts of activity where this is something that is really taking them on a journey in a certain period of their lives, and then they move on. And even if they've become popular because of it. It can sort of like take its toll because it can be a discovery process. It may be like, it was fun for this amount of time, but maybe it's no longer and moving on to something else. And it sounds like you've been able to take something that was fun for you and creative and actually transitioned it into something that actually is a career and can turn into more of a career in the film business.
Yeah, and I hope it continues to take me to new places, but I am but I guess I just never figured that I would be a film editor like only as my sole profession or as my sole source of income. So I am just looking to, try new things. And I'm also 25, so that's just it just goes with the territory of being in your 20s, just trying everything and seeing what you like. So it doesn't mean I'm going to abandon film editing completely at one point. It just means that I'm not married to it yet as my sole source of income.
Yes, absolutely. Looking back, is there anything that you think you would have done differently in terms of your journey from what you how where film editing has taken you and where you are now?
I guess I would have tried to have reached out more in terms of like actually filming things with friends or something. I guess I would have tried to have been like a little bit more social when I was younger and network better.
Yeah.
Because I actually like I never really had that experience of like going out and like actually filming things when I was a kid, and that's obviously what a lot of filmmakers did when they were kids. They just like got a camera and they went out with their friends and they filmed stuff. And I was never really that. And maybe that just means that I'm not a natural born director or something. But I kind of wish that I had had more of a social circle when I was younger. I think it would have helped me become a slightly less dysfunctional adult today.
Well,
In terms of film editing, not really. I mean, I used the resources that I had when I did, and I used them well enough that I was able to get rewarded with a swanky new software. And in terms of editing, no, I feel like, I did what I could when I did, and it's gotten me pretty far, all things considered. I do wish that I knew more editing programs. I tried to use Avid in college. It was, I think my editing class was like the transition period from Final Cut into Avid, and it was like hitting a brick wall. I just haven't been able to get on that learning curve. So, I guess my advice to editors would be to just try and learn like all the software that you can, because it's a good tool to have in your toolkit.
Yes. Have you ever tried Premiere or Sony Vegas?
I've tried Premiere and it's very similar to Final Cut, so I was able to pick that up pretty easily. But no, I've never tried the Sony Vegas software.
And so I heard you talk about this a little earlier. So you're looking at possibly an interest in distribution and other aspects of film. Could you say a little bit more about that? Like what has you be interested in that?
Well, I did an internship at a film festival a few years ago, and I really loved that. And I guess I just really liked being busy. I liked the hustle and bustle of it, and you obviously don't get that when you're alone at your computer, just working at your own pace and everything. And I liked networking with other filmmakers. I really loved that, just getting to, be the one on the other end of the phone saying, "Hey, guess what? Your film got in." And distribution, it's kind of like the natural next step in terms of filmmaking, because there's pre-production, there's production, there's post-production where film editing is, and then there's distribution and exhibition. So it is just kind of like the next logical step in a way. And I love movies in their completed form, which is probably why I wanted to be a film critic when I was younger. And I like films like at the end of their journey. I like it when, all the puzzle pieces are, almost coming together. And so if I can just do anything to help other filmmakers just get their work out there and to have that same experience I had at the Castro when I was 20 years old and I was seeing my own piece shown for the first time, and to get that immediate response, that's such a
Right.
gratifying experience. And I'd really like to help other people get that experience.
Wow. Yeah. That's great. I can really get that. Is there are there favorite movies that I guess either past or present that you've seen that like has really caught your attention and that you want to talk about that you that for you like inspires something in you?
Well, my favorite movie of all time is In a Lonely Place, and I feel like I'm always trying to plug that movie wherever I go. And I fell in love with that movie when I was 17. It's a 1950 movie with Humphrey Bogart, and it's not as well known as his other movies because it's a movie that he made after his tenure at Warner Brothers had expired. So it doesn't fit the mold of like that, the guy in the trench coat and the fedora and the gun. It was made in 1950, so it was a little later. And it was actually made at Columbia, where he produced it under his own banner. So he was the producer as well. And it's about Humphrey Bogart, and he plays this Hollywood screenwriter who is He is accused of murder at the same time that he falls in love for the first time in his life. And it doesn't, and I'm trying not to give too much away, but it's such an emotional movie. It works so much more as a love story than a film noir, because it doesn't quite fit into, the type of film noir archetypes that we've really become familiar with, the detective or whatnot, it is so much more interested in this relationship that he has with his neighbor, who may or may not end up saving his life, than it does with the murder mystery. And it's actually really comical the way that the director kind of disregards that in favor of this relationship. And what really hit me watching it when I was 17 was the fact that, you know, it's a really beautiful love story, but it doesn't at all try and use this concept that, you know, love is just gonna, it's just gonna fix everything. It completely eschews that, and instead it's a lot more interested in these two people and the flaws they have and the flaws that, you know, love just can't really quite overcome. And I thought that was just so beautiful when I was 17. You know, just, I feel like girls are so often fed this idea of romance that is not realistic at all, and it's all just going to end in a kiss, and, you know, it's just going to be over. And my parents split up when I was 5 years old, so I've never really held on to that concept anyways. I'm always a little more interested in romance movies where there is genuine love, but it's also just, the obstacles aren't stupid screenwriter tropes like cancer or, you know, parents who don't like each other, or crazy ex-boyfriends who want their exes back or something. And this one, it has, like, very real, both can or cannot overcome. And I feel like it's one of the only movies I've ever seen to really understand its own characters and to be true to themselves. And it's so rare to find that in a movie from 1950, especially a film noir, because film noirs, they had to adhere to the production code, which said that all criminals must be brought to justice and everything had to, you know, be fine in the end. And the fact that it was able to evade that is really, really different. And I think it's what makes it so modern today. And that was also a clip. I used so many clips from that in my Endless Night montage. So it might be recognizable to some people.
Right. Well, definitely, you've piqued my interest. I definitely will want to check that out. Just the way that you described it really has me
interested. Thank you. Interested.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Vidder Radio. It's an online radio show and podcast that focuses on fan vids and the vidding community. And I've been interviewing Serena Bramble about editing and movies and all that. And so, also, I want to say that this radio show is currently running as a trial, a sort of like a pilot, and it depends on listener support. And so if you would like to support this show and hear from other editors in the future, please visit our GoFundMe page at gofundme.com/vradio and give us a contribution, small or large, and it will go towards our operating costs and bringing you more shows like this. I was just thinking too, is there anything on TV? Although I'm wondering, I think you said that you don't really watch TV.
Well, I don't have cable. But I do watch TV. I usually watch on like Netflix or Hulu or something like that. But I've actually been watching a lot of TV in the last couple of years. I think that the quality of TV has definitely gotten so much better. And I think that a key thing is that networks are realizing that they would rather go for quality over quantity. So you're seeing much shorter seasons, but much better seasons as a result.
Right.
And yeah, and I think so many TV shows in the 90s could have been saved if they had just been, if they had had the format that we have today, like Twin Peaks. It had this amazing like first season of 8 episodes, and then the second season, you know, because they realized that they had a hit on their hands, they decide, oh well, we're gonna have put like, you know, 22 episodes out there, and you can tell that the writers and the cast just like was completely lost, and they were just, you know, drifting for so many episodes, and so now it's really fortunate they're getting a third season on Showtime next year. But for TV shows that I do really like, Mad Men is my favorite show right now. And I'm so disappointed that it's going to be ending, but all good things must come to an end. And What I liked about Mad Men and probably why it's my favorite show, like In a Lonely Place is my favorite movie, is I like that it just takes its time with its own characters and it remains completely true to them. And that journey that Dawn is on and that Peggy is on is really poignant. And the funny thing about Mad Men is that it's a show that is so defined by change and the fact that it is this changing era, and yet Dawn remains completely the same throughout the whole show. And I
Right.
feel like if Dawn ever became happy, it's almost like the will they won't they relationship on Mad Men is Dawn Draper and happiness. And if they ever get together, then the show won't really have much of a purpose anymore. So
Right.
that's a really interesting way to approach character development on that show, and I think it does it pretty well. And also, I seem to binge watch that show a lot throughout seasons when I was like 19 or 20, and I found it really comforting to know that whatever mistakes I was making in my life when I was 19 or 20, that there are these 35-year-olds on that show that were more screwed up than I was.
Yeah.
Yeah, and other shows that I really like. I love Archer and Bob's Burgers. They're these two animated shows, and H. Shawn Benjamin does voice work for both of them, and he's amazing. I love The Americans. It's kind of like Homeland meets Mad Men in a
Okay.
way, and if you haven't checked it out, you really should. I liked Parks and Recreation. I loved The X-Files. Twin Peaks, like I said, Twin Peaks is amazing.
It's funny, those last two shows you mentioned, I think, are coming back to TV. How do you feel about that?
Which
X-Files
ones?
and
I mentioned Twin Peaks, and was there another one?
X-Files.
Oh yeah, the X-Files. Well, I'm really I don't know. Like, I do want to be so excited about Twin Peaks because I felt like it didn't really get the send off that it deserved, and because the second season was so disjointed, and it's almost like the Frankenstein season. It's just like taking bits and pieces and seeing what fits. But I don't know, because I do want to love that, and I am really interested and excited that the David Lynch and Mark Frost are back. But then I didn't love the movie Fire Walk With Me, so I'm kind of approaching it with like a guarded enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And as for the X-Files, I don't know. I would love to see David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson back again, because I think that their chemistry is what held the show together for so long. And when Duchovny left, the show wasn't really the same. It was kind of more like the X-Files SVU after he left. I don't know. I have a guarded enthusiasm. I'll say
Yeah.
that for both shows. I would love to see them pull it off, but I'm not gonna hold my breath for a miracle.
I can understand that the disappointment
Yeah.
would be big.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've reached the end of our time here. I want to thank you so
Yeah,
much
and
for being a guest on the show.
yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I was about to say that I think my cell phone battery is about to run out, so we picked it.
Okay.
So it's all good things must come to an end.
Yes. So thank you very much, and thank you to our audience for listening. This show will be available as a podcast. I may need to do some post-production editing on the beginning, though. But if that works out, you won't even know what I'm talking about. So
Okay.
thank you for being our guest, and thank you to our listeners for listening. I'm gonna play out the end of the show with the same song we started with, or actually, I'm gonna play it out with a different song. Thanks again, and yeah, maybe we'll talk next time, and maybe hear your thoughts on The X-Files and Twin Peaks when they come back.
Okay. I'd like that. I'll make sure I drink water before the interview next time. I hope it didn't sound too much like Sarah
No.
Palin.
Oh, no. Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yes.